This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you.
Good evening. This is Rock Cash, your host this week on The People Speak. The People Speak invites audience participation. You can listen by phone calling 716-748-0144. Or if you have a smartphone or a computer, go to bbsradio.com, navigate to Station 2, click on the listen icon. You can also participate during this show with calling questions for our guest. Toll free, USA and Canada, 888-429-5471. Joining us tonight, James Fetzer. James Fetzer is an editor at Veterans Today. He is a former Marine Corps officer. He is a professor. He's written many books. He's a book author. And I have a lot of questions, so I don't want to put out all your information out there, Mr. Fetzer, but welcome to the show, James.
Thanks, Rock. Call me Jim.
Okay, Jim. It's a pleasure having you tonight, might I say. Your website that you added on Veterans Today is a wonderful site for a lot of veterans to really be informed with what's really going on today here in the States. So can you please tell us about it?
Yeah, Veterans Today actually is a leading journal dealing with both domestic politics and foreign affairs that is run by a group of very experienced former military officers, and where the senior editor of Veterans Today, Gordon Duff, has extraordinary defense and intelligence contacts and has made the journal a flagship for those who want to know what's really going on behind the scenes.
I was looking at the site today, and I seen something that was very, very troubling, and that's the date of June 22nd, 2014.
Yes, that's one of my two most recent articles, and that a fellow from the UK by the name of John Kimber had discovered after the fact that there were many indications, anticipations of 9/11 that were found in a variety of television programs, sometimes movies. But he has been disturbed by finding a pattern rather analogous to that for the 22nd of June, where the evidence suggests that it might be the occasion for Operation Blackjack involving the bombing of London, Paris, Washington, D.C., Toronto, Mexico City, New York, Los Angeles, Portland, oddly enough, where the alleged perpetrators would be domestic extremists armed by Iran, Syria, and China. I think today they probably throw Russia into the mix, given the tensions between the U.S. and Russia over Ukraine.
And who is behind this? Is it our government, or is it the world government, or what exactly?
I think this would be the false flag attack of all false flag attacks. Just as in the case of 9/11, we had collusion between the CIA, the neocons and the Department of Defense and the Mossad. In fact, many intelligence experts have observed only two agencies in the world could have pulled it off, the CIA and the Mossad. And in this instance, they were acting in collaboration. I've done quite a lot on 9/11. I founded Scholars for 9/11 Truth in December of 2005, organized its first national conference in Madison in 2007, its first international conference in Vancouver in 2012, and meanwhile published its first book entitled The 9/11 Conspiracy, The Scamming of America.
Well, they definitely are scamming America, but there's also talks of a militarized police force. So are they actually going to go through with the police state and the police state action?
Well, it's a great question, Rock. In fact, one of the reasons for Sandy Hook, and that's the other article I want especially to talk with you about this evening, appears to have been to motivate an aggressive gun control agenda. It was a fabricated case. We have a mountain of evidence that it did not occur as it has been advertised, but the American public is very gullible and tends to believe what they're told by the mass media, even though it's controlled by the CIA. in this instance, Homeland Security and the Department of Justice appear to have been involved in the Sandy Hook. Governor Malloy gave a press conference the day of the event with his lieutenant governor explaining that they had been spoken to, that something like this might happen. And it got me thinking, spoken to, something like this, what could that have been? There are only really two choices. The first is that someone was going to go berserk and shoot a lot of children in a Connecticut public school, in which case the governor ought to have taken appropriate action by notifying all the school districts to upgrade their security, be very careful, precautions under this set of circumstances, which he did not do. Or alternatively, that he'd been told that they were going to take an abandoned school and they were going to use it to conduct a drill that would be presented to the public as though it had been a real event to promote an anti-gun agenda, which is exactly what happened. And we now know that Eric Holder, the Attorney General of the United States, visited Governor Malloy less than a month before Sandy Hook and appears to be the one who spoke to him about it. Where we now have confirmation, you know, I mean, I've done a mountain of work on Sandy Hook, too, collaborative research, very powerful stuff. One of the most important articles we have produced is entitled Top 10 Reasons Sandy Hook Was an Elaborate Hoax, which has had an enduring readership on Veterans Today. It's been in the top 10 for about 4 months since it was published. But the other article, which just appeared on Friday, Sandy Hook Redux, Obama officials confirmed that it was a drill and no children died, is based upon an interview of Los Angeles school expert Paul Preston by Sophia Smallstorm, where I had a transcript created, and where among Paul Preston's many observations are the following. I have a lot of sources in regards to what's going on with the president and the administration and so on, and every one of my sources said it was a false flag, Paul Preston. So here again, as close as you get, I think, to the administration inside insiders admitting it was a false flag, when Sophia pressed him whether this was based upon their own personal knowledge or just rumor, he emphasized, yes, it was based upon their own personal rumor. These were individuals, officials with the Department of Education, who were acknowledging that they knew it had been a drill, that no children had died, and it had been taken place to promote an anti-gun agenda.
Well, actually, I know somebody that was also involved as a crisis actor at the Boston Marathon bombing.
Fantastic. That's very good. I love that, Rock. I mean, because, you know, we have a Hollywood producer-director by the name of Nathan Foulkes, F-O-L-K-S, who observed that this was what's known as hyper-reality filming, where you try to create a situation as graphic as possible to train, for example, troops who've never been into combat what they might expect, and who has also observed that one of the main players there was an actor he'd previously cast in one of his own films.
Yes, well, I'm a part of that film. I've been in the process of getting it out, but hopefully it'll be released on iTunes. It's called The Prosecution of an American President. Of course, Vincent Bugliosi being the writer of the book called The Prosecution of George W. Bush. So this is based on that book, and it should be out, I believe, in August on iTunes.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I know Vince. He and I and Jesse Ventura, for example, had dinner together in St. Paul, Minnesota, when Vince was being given an honorary law degree by Hamline College. And while he and I disagree completely about JFK, where he has taken the, to me, quite bizarre position of defending the official account, which I and those with whom I have collaborated have been able to slice and dice dozens and dozens of different ways. I mean, it's completely outrageous. His other books, including the one about the prosecution of George W. Bush, I think are superb pieces of work.
Oh, absolutely. And Vince is a very pleasant guy. I got to meet him one time in the process, but he was sick during the premiere, so I didn't get to meet him. But I know Nathan Foulkes very well, and a few other people that are involved in the movie. What do you see them act actually doing on June 22nd? Is it going to be the enforcement of the police state, or is it going to be an actual nuclear attack? Or,
well, if the event actually goes forward, I mean, it's very much a Jericho scenario. And by sheer coincidence, my wife and I have been watching Jericho again, and we're about most of the way through the first season. And it's that kind of scenario where you have these bombings in multiple cities. They're not necessarily Hiroshima-type bombs. These could be dirty bombs that are going to create a great deal of contamination. But the idea of disrupting these major cities around the world, of course, would be an occasion where Barack Obama might feel obligated to exercise his dictatorial impulses by declaring martial law. And, you know, there are so many possibilities here. In fact, we know Homeland Security has been gearing up to go to war with the American people. It's acquired over 2 billion rounds of 40 caliber hollow point ammunition, which is not even permissible for use in combat under the Hague Convention of 1899. It's got, you know, thousands of assault weapons, a whole lot of these light tanks of the kind that were deployed in Boston. Well, it appears very clear that the Boston scenario was intended to undermine Posse Comitatus, a statute passed in 1878 to preclude the use of military force to perform police functions. Soldiers were going door to door and evicting residents. It was completely unreasonable, a gross violation of the Fourth Amendment. Afterwards, Chuck Hagel, our Secretary of Defense, said he thought that Posse Comitatus ought to be discarded. And Mayor Michael Bloomberg, who had most recently denied us the right to drink a big Slurpee, said that he thought the Constitution itself needed to be reconsidered. I mean, Rock, this is just outrageous. Who is Michael Bloomberg to talk about us reconsidering the Constitution, for God's sake? I mean, our founding fathers knew what we were doing. We grow up understanding that the Constitutional Republic was the greatest experiment in democracy that history has ever known. So what is he doing talking about reconsidering the foundations of this nation? I'm really troubled by that.
Well, I pretty much agree with you, and I'm very troubled by it also, but I'm troubled that they took the Pledge of Allegiance out of the schools, not because it says God in it, but I believe they took it out because it says Republic, because this nation was founded as a republic and not a democracy.
Rocket, the Pledge of Allegiance has been taken out of the schools. I'm unaware of that, I must confess. So that comes as news to me. I'd be very surprised. But the idea that they're going for a gun grab is not surprising. You and your listeners may be fascinated to learn that on 3 October 2012, a subcommittee of the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs issued a report based upon its review of 680 fusion center studies, where fusion centers merge federal, state, and local anti-terrorist activity, gathered all over the United States between 2009 and 2010, and rocking those 680 studies, they found not a single instance of domestic terrorist attack, not one, zilch, zero, nada, zip, which is makes it just incredible that they should be proclaiming that all this surveillance activity is to protect us from domestic terrorists, when the only domestic terrorists we know of are ones that have been fabricated, like the Boston bombing, Sandy Hook. The FBI's been complicit in a host of these. It's embarrassing that the role that our government has descended to. It's grossly corrupt and totally misleading, and the opposite of the functions it ought to be performing on behalf of the American people.
Well, you're forgetting the terrorist attacks against the American people, like at Waco and the Murrah building and everything else.
The terrorist attacks, right? The firemen were bringing unexploded devices out from under the Murrah building. There's no way that fertilizer bomb, which was a distance from the building, could have brought about the massive forms of destruction. Waco was completely disgusting. I mean, I have a friend who is a former top shrink for the FBI, who advised them at Waco that using all this loud music and all that was affecting the FBI forces deployed around the building as much as those inside the building. They could have picked up David Koresh any time on the road when he wandered back and forth from town. This was a deliberate effort to try to trash, you know, independence movements of various kinds, militia movements, whatever you want. They're out there to try to undermine them. And it was disgusting how they used, you know, this tank that was able to use flamethrowers. We have aerial surveillance photos showing automatic weapons being fired by the FBI, which claimed it did no such thing. I mean, it's a complete atrocity. I think we are of one mind about this.
Yeah, well, John at Reno definitely goofed up on that one, but it was, I believe they called their operation the Fast and Furious. And that was against people that saw where this government was heading to and woke up, I guess, a lot quicker than you and I did.
Well, I mean, you know, there is quite a history here leading up to 9/11 as the granddaddy of all the false flags. But if this thing on 22 June were to take place, it would be a topper. And let us hope, of course, that it doesn't. I mean, revealing the incidents that are being planned like this can be the single most effective way to cause them not to take place. Because since they've been exposed in advance, if they go forward, everyone will know what was going on here. But it does appear to be, as in the case of 9/11, collusion between the CIA, Homeland Security, I would suggest in this case, and the Mossad. That is the most likely explanation.
Well, it's hard for people to understand because they're used to watching the media and they just keep derailing conspiracy theorists are nut jobs. Well, you know, these people don't want to be labeled as nut jobs, so they can't believe that the government would do anything against them because I believe it's the fear of the labeling, even though that they might know inside of them that something's not right, but they still fear to believe in a sense.
Well, that's, yes. I mean, psychologists describe this phenomenon as cognitive dissonance, where individuals who receive information that's threatening to their core beliefs, such as the belief that your government is there to protect you and to nurture you and to act on your behalf, is so threatened by the idea that it might have brought about the deaths of some 3,000 of your fellow citizens to promote a political agenda, is extremely disturbing. It's like a woman who finds evidence that her husband has been molesting their daughter. It's so threatening to her core beliefs that she suppresses, denies, or ignores it until, say, eventually years later when the truth comes out, she's at a loss to explain why she could do nothing about it. I believe, Rock, that the reason this latest article of mine on Sandy Hook is so terribly important is that it seems to have cut through all of those defense mechanisms. It may be the title, Sandy Hook Redux. Obama officials confirm that it was a drill and no children died. Maybe it's because it's a new source. It's a Los Angeles school safety expert who has like 41 years invested in this, who's conducted these kinds of shooting drills himself, and who looked at the evidence, the coverage of Sandy Hook as it was taking place, and wasn't buying it. He knew there was no way. There was no intensity there. There was no sense of urgency. There was no rush of EMTs into the building to rush the little bodies off to hospitals where doctors could declare them to be dead or alive. Even EMTs aren't qualified to do that. Where are the children, he asked. That was a point I made to the Newtown School Board when Wolfgang Halbig, who's a former Florida state trooper, a school administrator with 36 years in the business and now a national school safety expert, and I asked when we addressed the Newtown School Board just about 6 weeks ago, I said, you know, I have looked up about Sandy Hook Elementary School. It's a 10-star school, meaning it ranked 10 out of 10 on 10 criteria, including external and internal, even though we have footage now showing that the school was in a state of disrepair. The playground equipment was really not functional, that they had all kinds of materials stored in the building, that it wasn't Americans with Disability Act compliant. And having been in Sandy Hook, I can tell you that's a very upscale community. So I asked, you know, where were the children? I mean, that Sandy Hook had 626 children. But if you subtract 20, that's 600. So where are the 600 children that had to be evacuated? As Paul Preston points out, FEMA requires every school to have an evacuation plan. Well, nothing like that was taking place. In fact, the only photograph we have, and we have none internal to the building of the crime scene of the bodies or the blood and what have you, is one photograph that shows someone, apparently a teacher, leading a small group of maybe 15 or 20 students, apparently away from Sandy Hook. But when you look at the location of the vehicles in the background, it's very clear it was taken previous to the event, because the cars are not in the right locations to have been taken at the time of the alleged shooting. I mean, Paul Preston just goes through case after case, and what I did was have a transcript made of the second half hour of his interview with Sophia Smallstorm, and then I supplemented with videos and photographs so you could look at the evidence he's talking about for yourself. And I think that combination has just proven to be very powerful. It's had like 150,000 reads recorded on Veterans Today. I know a federal whistleblower by the name of Stu Webb who tells me that the numbers of hits for Veterans Today articles are being suppressed by the government because they don't want the public to know how widely they're read, and that the actual number is probably five times that many. But in addition, it has had shares running close to now 2,000 shares, which means repostings on other websites, for example, where each of those could in turn have hundreds or even 1,000 readers of their own. So it looks to me, Rock, as though this article is the one that's breaking through. So he had the previous top 10 reasons, which has endured for so many months as a constant readership. But now this one, you know, vertical in depth, as it were, if the other is broad and encompassing with the 10 different areas in which Sandy Hook can be exposed as a hoax. This one is in depth by a fresh face, a new resource who had contacts within the Obama administration, who confirmed to him, based on their own personal knowledge, that this was a drill, that no children were killed, and it was done to promote an anti-gun agenda.
Well, one thing about Sandy Hook that I noticed, and that was while I was watching the actual event happening, I noticed a bunch of stretchers and no ambulances. That seemed very, very odd to me.
You're absolutely right, Rock. I mean, that's one of many indications. We have a photograph showing that there was a Connecticut State Police helicopter over Sandy Hook at 9:15, which is striking when you realize that the first 911 call only came in at 9:35. So it was there like 20 minutes early. And the medevac helicopter that normally would be called, even if it were only a drill, was in this instance not called. Wolfgang Halbig contacted them and asked what happened that day. And they said, well, they just sat waiting for the phone to ring, and it never rang, and they couldn't explain it. I mean, Wolf has observed that's just one of many inconsistencies in what was taking place, that they were not following emergency protocols, but they were following drill protocols. And we have all kinds of photographs of people there. They're all, you know, milling around. They're in casual dress. They have name tags on, lanyards, or porta potties in the distance. Can you believe this? Wolfgang is asked who ordered the porta potties, and they won't even tell him that. I mean, this is how ridiculous it's got. He's made FOIA request after FOIA request with no response. He's made phone call after phone call. They won't return his calls. I mean, that's a principal reason why we went up to Sandy Hook to take a look for ourselves. But in the meanwhile, he'd been approached by two homicide detectives in the vicinity of the gated community where he resides, who came to his home to tell him on the behalf of the Connecticut State Police that if he continued to ask questions about Sandy Hook, that he would be prosecuted. And I say, what's wrong with this picture? I mean, what's going on here? It's consistent with the fact that the final reports from the Connecticut State authorities do not list the names or the ages or the sex of any of the victims, that the Newtown's clerk entered into secret negotiations with the state legislature to avoid issuing death certificates, that the state attorney general tried to block the release of the 911 calls, and when the court directed him to do so anyway, he appears to be in a state of non-compliance because there were some 115, and so far as I can tell, only a half a dozen have been released. That they had a special panel of the state legislature who has recommended that they adopt as a new law that any state employee who releases information about Sandy Hook should be prosecuted as having committed an e-felony and be eligible for a 5-year prison sentence, and where all the workers who were involved in the demolition of the building were required to take a lifetime gag order, not to talk about anything they saw or did not see, which, Rock, I'm quite sure includes no bullet holes in the walls and no blood on the floor.
Well, I have a question for you, and it's a personal question. I don't know if you're in combat or not, but you're a former military officer, Marine Corps. When somebody has his leg blown off, can you sit up in a wheelchair?
We have multiple medical experts who have commented on the absurdity of the alleged carnage in the Boston bombing. I mean, you got this young man whose legs are purportedly blown off below the knee. He's not spurting blood. Normally, the loss of blood would render him unconscious in a minute, dead in two. Instead, there's someone behind him wearing a hood who's assisting him in attaching a false prosthesis. As you well know, he should be kept on a horizontal plane, removed in a stretcher. Instead, he was put in a wheelchair and rushed off where the vibrations were so substantial they caused the false prosthesis to fall off and they had to stop and reattach it. There's a fellow wearing a cowboy hat running along beside him holding a piece of rag as though it were supposed to be a tourniquet, but isn't being applied tightly enough to perform the function. We have earlier photographs, by the way, film actually of him standing by in the background waiting until he's supposed to begin to perform his role in accordance with a script. And I believe it's this person that Nathan Foulkes was referring to when he talked about having cast him in a film of his own, the one with which you are familiar.
Yes, that's Carlos Alejandro, and he was one of the parents that supposedly lost his kid in Iraq.
Yeah.
So,
but the fact is the same fellow who's alleged to have lost his legs, and no one's ever turned up the legs that were supposed to have been blown off him on the occasion. In fact, initially, there's not even any blood there. Lorraine Day, who's the former head of surgery at San Francisco General Hospital, for 25 years, has observed that it was preposterous that there should be no blood at the scene concurrent with a blast because it would blow the blood all over the place. Instead, there's a tube there you can see in some of the photos from which this blood seems to have been poured out. It's artificial looking. It's very bright reddish orange. Real blood oxidizes when it encounters the air and turns dark red. She asked, where are the so-called 200 victims? Because the press has talked about 200 victims. There aren't more than 20 in the footage we see immediately. And none of them appear to be seriously harmed. And none of them is willing to put their face down on the sidewalk where, you know, Bostonians rub their dirty shoes and spit on the ground. They're avoiding doing that. If these were people who had suffered serious injuries, the last thing they would care about is whether their face came in contact with a dirty sidewalk. And you know, the whole thing is a contrivance. It's embarrassing. I had quite a conversation with Dr. Stan Monteith. He has a radio show, Dr. Stan. He is himself an orthopedic surgeon. When we discussed this, he explained how he'd performed these kinds of amputations himself, now how it takes like 3 or 4 months to recover from the amputation, and then you have to go through 3 or 4 more months of physical therapy to learn how to operate without your legs. And yet this same fellow, Jeff Bauman, presumably, was at a Boston Bruins game 19 days later. He's in a wheelchair, but now his legs have been amputated above the knee. And Dr. Stan was just baffled by this until I explained how they'd attached this false prosthesis with his bone extension to be more emotionally horrifying. And he realized and, you know, considered the situation and concluded perfectly accurately that this man must be an actor. In fact, it turns out they're advertising for crisis actors for all kinds of events around the country. Right now, there's some out there for an event in Atlanta. And, you know, other sources are sending me others. I mean, Rock, it's disgusting. It's completely disgusting.
So I'm guessing something is going to happen in Atlanta in the near future.
Yeah, well, my next article may be about some of these advertisements that are coming out on Craigslist asking for crisis actors. I mean, they're being very open about it. I think they realize now the American people can be conned. The American people can be played for saps, and they're going to continue to do it. And, you know, something that shocks me about this whole thing, Rock, is If you stop and ask yourself, where would this country be without the Second Amendment? Where would this country be without citizen soldiers? Where would this country be without Minutemen? How could we have resisted the British oppression if we weren't armed and capable of carrying out the first American Revolution? What if we were to be invaded by some foreign power? I'm not predicting this. I don't think it will happen. But what if it were the case that the Russians were coming, or the Chinese are coming, or the Mexicans are coming? What if we had a Jericho scenario where there were bombings and the government was no longer functional? How are the citizens supposed to fend for themselves if they don't have any weapons? In fact, the whole idea is so grotesquely stupid, I can't believe that there are serious politicians out there promoting it. I mean, the reason we call police when we have a problem is because they are armed. If we ourselves are armed, then we don't have to call the police. We usually don't show up in time to make a difference anyway. I mean, suppose you're in a convenience store and some guy comes in and robs the place and shoots the clerk, and you're there too, and he starts to set his sight on you. If you had your concealed carry weapon with you, you might have done something about it, maybe even saved the clerk's life. Or but what if some, you know, the homeless, this country may be on the verge of economic collapse. What if homeless people who are starving break into your home? What if they want to, some gang wants to break into your house and tie you up, murder your wife, and rape your daughter? If you had weapons, you might have been able to do something about it. If you don't, you're hopeless. In fact, in communities where they have taken away the guns, the crime rate soars because burglars and thieves and others can permit crimes with impunity, knowing at least they're not going to be shot. There have been attempts to go door to door to ask people if they'd like a nice sign in their yard saying, "This is a gun-free zone." Rock, I don't know anyone else who's picked up on that offer.
Well, we picked up on that and a lot more, but we'll be right back after a short break with our guest, James Fetzer of Veterans Today, and Don Newsom, our awesome sound engineer on the BBS Radio Network.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
Got questions? The library's got answers. And books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
In America, most of us have the basics we need to survive. But there are millions of children all over the world who don't. Children who must work instead of going to school. Children who were forced to fight as child soldiers. Children who can't have an ordinary childhood because they lack health care, clean water, or good nutrition. For these children, there is UNICEF. UNICEF works in 157 countries and territories, providing children with what they need to survive and grow. To learn more, visit UNICEFUSA.org or call 1-800-4-UNICEF.
Hello, this is Wesley Snipes. And when I'm divinely inspired and spiritually motivated, I listen to BBSRadio.com.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
This land
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
Welcome back to The People Speak on the BBS Radio Network. Thanks to our sound engineer.
One of the ironies of all this is that there are towns around the country, one in Georgia in particular, where they require every home to have a firearm. And would you believe that the crime rate dropped 89%? And Rock was commenting during the break how he knew of other communities where that was the case. And I have absolutely no doubt about it. So just realize, when the attempt is being made to promote this anti-gun agenda, ask yourself why. Ultimately, I believe that all that stands between the Department of Homeland Security and the imposition of a military police state is 100 million armed Americans. Now, ironically, the events of Sandy Hook have led to millions of Americans purchasing firearms for the first time. I have a friend who loves to tell the story about going to a sporting goods store, and a little old lady was working a shotgun, and the clerk was saying, now, wouldn't you like something maybe a little easier to handle, like a 22 rifle? And she said, no, no, sonny, if they come after me, I'm going to blow them away. And I think there are a lot of Americans who realize how important it is that they should be armed. After all, this vast surveillance by the NSA isn't targeting any domestic terrorists who are, you know, as popular as hen's teeth. You're more likely to die from being struck by lightning or by a swarm of bees than you are from a terrorist attack in the USA. But they are targeting veterans and 9/11 truthers, constitutionalists, Ron Paul supporters, NRA members, anyone who might have the intelligence and the disposition and the ability to stand up and resist the imposition of a fascistic police state by force. And I say that's what's going on, what the American people have to understand, my opinion, in the face of the calamity, the situation we're in, where there may be a collapse of the economy, is stock up on guns and ammunition. If you don't know how to shoot, learn to shoot. Join a local gun club. There are plenty of, in every city, there's a way where you can learn to handle firearms safely. Get used to handling firearms before you actually purchase one. Find what works best for you. Stock up on enough food and water and clothing and so forth for at least several weeks, because who knows, we may be in a situation where communications are cut off if the government were taken out by an event like this. Operation Blackjack being described in the article about 22 June, which is right around the corner, by the way. We're talking not about months off. We're talking about this coming Sunday. You got to be prepared for any eventuality, and the idea of giving up your guns is as ludicrous as it gets. Rock, have we got you back, my friend?
Absolutely. I've never left. I was going to add to that, also, throw out your cell phones, folks.
Because they can be used to track you everywhere. They're GPS identification locators.
Absolutely. I've got a question from Clifford in Texas, and he wants to know, after you interviewed Dr. Judy Wood about her direct energy weapons, with your familiarity and architects and engineers of 9/11 Truth, specifically Neil Harrod's nanothermite pure reviewed paper, how do you feel about today's AE 9/11 Truth position to put distance between yourself and Judy Wood? And how do you explain the presence of the ignited nanothermite being found at the WTC dust, yet no physical evidence exists of due theory?
Well, this is a fairly complicated set of issues. There are at least three major divisions within 9/11 Research Group. One is represented by Judy Wood and her directed energy weapon hypothesis. Another is represented by architects and engineers, which to this day cling to nanothermite as their preferred explanation for what happened. A third is represented by myself and a host of others, Dr. Ed Ward, Jeff Prager, Don Fox, Dennis Camino, and others who have authored a series of articles about the fact that the evidence we have available today supports the conclusion that the best explanation for the destruction of the Twin Towers is that it was done using a sophisticated arrangement of micro or mini nukes. Now, just to talk briefly about nanothermite, I did a series of articles with T. Mark Hightower, who's a chemical engineer, about nanothermite, where Mark did a survey of the scientific literature. It turns out to be a law of material science. This is like a law of physics. This is a law of material science. It can't be violated and it can't be changed. That in order for an explosive to destroy a material, it must have a detonation velocity equal to or greater than the speed of sound in that material. The speed of sound in concrete is 3,200 meters per second. In steel, 6,100 meters per second. But the highest detonation velocity attributed to nanothermite in the scientific literature is only 895 meters per second. That means you can't get there from there, even though Steve Jones assured me personally in the lobby of the Sheraton Hotel in Los Angeles in June of 2006 during the American Scholars Conference, where C-SPAN would cover the press, the panel discussion the following morning, which lasted an hour and 45 minutes and broadcast it seven or eight times at very good time slots, that, oh yes, nanothermite could, you know, pulverize the concrete, decimate the steel. He assured me on that occasion that it could. The fact of the matter is Steve was wrong. And nanothermite can't have performed those feats. We published those articles before, at least two of the three, possibly all three, before the Vancouver hearings. And it was, to me, surprising when one of the judges actually asked Kevin Ryan during the hearings whether nanothermite had ever been used to destroy a building. And Kevin Ryan had to admit no, it never had been, so that the judge, whose name was Richard Lee, asked the follow-up question, then why are we discussing it? To which Kevin Ryan replied, it's because this was a deceptive theory of demolition. What he meant by that is anyone's guess. In any case, nanothermite isn't even a player. It cannot be a primary cause of the destruction of the building. It may have made some incidental contributions, however, for special effects. I remember watching Jesse Ventura doing a program on 9/11, and he had a single isolated steel beam on which he'd put a thermite grenade. And I was watching as it was cutting through the beam and turning to my wife and saying, honey, that's taking more time to cut through that single beam than it took to destroy the North or the South Tower, which, of course, NIST recorded as having taken place in 9 and 11 seconds, respectively. It was taking more time than that for this thermite to cut through that single steel beam. So I just submit, the problem with architects and engineers is they're hung up on an indefensible theory. They don't actually, they are better at debunking the official account than explaining how it happened. And when it comes to who is responsible and why, they just won't go there. Surprisingly, Judy Wood doesn't go there either. I know Judy very well. I was the very first person to interview her on radio on 11 November 2006. In fact, it was my interviewing her that so upset Stephen Jones, Kevin Ryan, and others who were committed to nanothermite that they broke away from Scholars. I mean, it was a huge event in terms of the truth movement that they did that. But they didn't want consideration to be given to alternative theories, because I'm a professional philosopher of science. I earned my PhD in the history and the philosophy of science. I know that the only way you can establish which among a set of alternative theories is the most adequate is by comparing them. You have to look at each of those hypotheses as causes in relation to the available evidence as effects to determine which of them can provide the most adequate explanation, by conferring the highest probability on those effects if they were true, if they were the actual cause. We already know that nanothermite can't cut it. In fact, it's fascinating when you look at the comparison between Building 7 and the Twin Towers. Building 7 came down in what appears to be a classic controlled demolition. All the floors are coming down at the same time. When it's over, you got a stack of debris equal to about 12% of the height of the original 47 floors, or about 5.5 floors. They're not, that Building 7 isn't blowing apart in every direction. However, Building 1 and 2, the North and the South Tower, are blowing apart in every direction. They're not just coming down under the influence of gravity, which works in just one direction down. They're being converted into millions of cubic yards of very fine dust. And when it's over, as Father Frank Morales from St. Mark's Episcopal Church, who was a first responder on the scene, related to me twice during interviews on my own radio show, they were actually destroyed below ground level. There's photographic evidence that substantiate what he observed. One of my favorites is a photograph film taken looking down on Building 6, which has that huge scooped-out center. In the back, you can see the massive pile of debris from Building 7. And in the immediate foreground, you can see a couple of fragments from the external steel support columns, but where Building 1 should have been, nothing. If you had 12% of the height of a 110-story building, you'd have 12 or 13 floors of debris there. Instead, you have nothing, which means that they weren't done the same way. And indeed, all of the evidence we have now, which is overwhelmingly greater, even when you come to the dust evidence, than what Steve Jones and Kevin Ryan had, which had been acquired from a couple of apartments. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted multiple dust studies all over the city of New York, and they discovered elements in the dust that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Those included barium and strontium, uranium, lithium, lanthanum, tritium. I mean, it's really completely fascinating that the dust evidence from the U.S. Geological Survey completely overwhelms the dust evidence that Steve Jones and Kevin Ryan and Niels Herod are predicating their views upon. So while I'm not denying that nanothermite may have played a subsidiary role, it cannot be the principal cause, which appears to have been done as a nuclear event. When we conducted the Vancouver hearings in 2012, where I had organized the first national conference for scholars in Madison in 2007 and the first international conference in Vancouver in 2012, at that time we believed that there had been 1,000 first responders who suffered from bizarre forms of cancer, multiple myeloma, esophageal cancer, and the like, that are typically associated with exposure to ionizing radiation. But now it turns out that in a series of new articles by Kevin Duff in Veterans Today, he's explained there are 70,000 victims who are seeking support from relief by these kinds of effects of a radiation weapon. So it appears that while Judy Wood, you know, Judy has never really been very specific about what she means by directed energy weapons. And I didn't add that in addition to that first interview, I interviewed her 14 more times. I gave her 3 hours to speak during the Madison conference. If you track down, you know, the DVD, The Science and Politics of 9/11, you'll hear Judy Wood speaking for 3 hours. I, in my 35 years as an academician, I went to many conferences. I never heard of anyone being offered the opportunity to speak for 3 hours. It's completely unprecedented. And wow. Therefore, you know, what she has talked about in the form of directed energy weapon is a source of energy that exceeds conventional that can be directed, which turns out to be true of these mini and micro nukes, which we believe were neutron or even positron weapons. They could be directed upwards and set off in a sequence that could roughly simulate a collapse, but where no collapse actually took place.
Great, great. We're running out of time, but let me get in a couple of quick questions for you. Frank in Kentucky wants to know what you think of the Federal Reserve. Do you look to end it, and what do you see as a replacement for that?
Absolutely. The Federal Reserve is a mechanism to make a consortium of private banks and bankers rich. Woodrow Wilson realized belatedly that, you know, when it had been passed like at midnight on Christmas Eve, that it was a huge, huge mistake. JFK wanted to abolish or reform the Fed. I remember as a young Marine Corps officer holding a bill with a red embossed imprint that said United States note instead of green and Federal Reserve note, because he thought it was absurd that the American government should be paying interest to a consortium of private banks for printing the currency of the United States. He instructed the Department of the Treasury to publish hundreds of millions of United States notes. But for his assassination, we would have got rid of the Fed around 1963, 64, 65. Instead, of course, Lyndon Johnson reversed JFK on all the major policies, such as his desire to shatter the CIA into 1,000 pieces, to get our forces out of Vietnam, to crack down on the mafia, to, you know, reduce or abolish the oil depletion allowance. He was opposing Israel on its desire to acquire nuclear weapons. On all of these issues, Lyndon Johnson reversed JFK, and it's therefore stunning that there are some very prominent figures, such as Noam Chomsky, who insists that even if there had been a conspiracy, it was of no consequence because no significant policy issues were involved. Well, he could not be more wrong. The Fed is a bad thing. It's bleeding the United States. It's now a form of fiat currency. They just have a printing press. They can print off any amount of money they want. That's obviously an invitation to all kinds of fiscal mischief and to undermining the stability of the United States with regard to its currency. The Fed is bad.
Awesome. One more question for you. Phil in the Middle East wants to know what you think of when Gordon Duff, I believe that's his name, estimates all of his high-level officials in the military are going to be fed up enough to being pawns and, to these neocons in Washington and start being 911 whistleblowers while in office rather than after they become former officials.
Well, I hope that Gordon is correct. He is the senior editor at Veterans Today. He has very deep intelligence and defense contacts. He's not the only one who holds out this prospect. Preston James, who's another highly regarded author at Veterans Today, has suggested that's precisely what's taking place and that it's in the works. I would like to believe that is correct. Gordon has reported that two Israeli submarines were recently sunk, and that this appears to have been at least in part retribution for the Israeli attack on the USS Liberty during the Six Days War in 1967, where Lyndon Johnson directed that the American fighters going to their defense be called back. That was not only a blot on the name of Lyndon Johnson, who, by the way, was a key player in bringing about the assassination of JFK, but one on Israel, which is a master of conducting false flag attacks around the world, including, of course, the blowing up of the King David Hotel in 1946 when a gang of Ergun terrorists dressed as Arabs blew it up to drive the British out of Palestine. I've already mentioned the attack on the USS Liberty. They attacked their own embassy in 1992 in Buenos Aires. And when that didn't bring about enough death, then they turned to their Jewish community center. You can read about that in false flag attacks in Argentina in 1992 and 1994, which I co-authored with Adrian Salbucci, who is an expert on the subjects. And, of course, it's continued to 9/11. Israel does more of this than any other nation. Israel is not our friend. It's astonishing to learn that all of our raw NSA surveillance data goes directly to Tel Aviv. So I have, during international newscasts, explained to other nations that unless they want all of their data to go directly to Israel, they should not share it with the United States. We become an untrustworthy partner. We got engaged in the Middle East to destroy these modern, sophisticated Arab states, to eliminate a counterbalance to Israeli domination of the Middle East. Israel has had a pernicious influence, malevolent influence on the United States for decades now. It must come to an end.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. Who sunk the submarines, the Israeli submarines? Was it our military that did that?
It appears to be the case, Rock. Yes, that appears to be the case.
Wow, and none of that ever made it out in the news.
Well, you see, the news is so tightly controlled. I mean, William Colby, former director of the CIA, observed that the agency owns everyone of significance in the major media. Carl Bernstein had published in Rolling Stone in 1977 in an article entitled "The CIA and the Media" that the agency officials were boasting that their greatest successes have been with Time Life, with the New York Times, and with CBS. And in that era, if you controlled those three news outlets, you had a lock on American news. The New York Times, the Washington Post, the Chicago Tribune, the LA Times, they're all dominated by CIA. You can only find truth about foreign affairs from Russia Today or Press TV. You're not going to learn it from American news sources, sad to say.
Well, that, and they can learn it here on the People Speak because we're getting it out there. Mike in California wants to know what's with the 9/11 the rift with the 9/11 movement involving Christopher Bolin.
Well, it's very interesting. Gordon Duff published these articles, you know, substantiating the use of nukes on 9/11. And Christopher Bolin, who's published a very good book about 9/11, but which goes overboard about nanothermite, attacked Gordon Duff. So that I had to felt obligated to publish an article setting the record straight, and that Bolin was wrong in attacking Duff, who was right about the use of nukes. And while Bolin was correct about Israeli complicity in 9/11, he was wrong that nanothermite was how the job got done. So there you have that's the bare bones of the situation.
Okay, with you also being a former military officer, how easy is it to have two Global Hawk drones just disappear in June of 2001?
Well, that's a very interesting question, Rock, because as you know, very difficult to arrange. It's like during the George H.W. Bush administration, several of our nuclear weapons just went missing. They later turned up in the Israeli military arsenal, where a senior officer of NATO, who's now a member of the staff for Veterans Today, actually observed them. And indeed, when Vladimir Putin has made remarks lately about having information that exposed 9/11 as an inside job, what he appears to have is Russian satellite data that tracked the gamma radiation from these weapons when they were smuggled into New York aboard a submarine, which is consistent with everything else I've been telling you about 9/11. That appears to be how those weapons were brought into the United States, but they were made available to Israel by the George H.W. Bush administration. Disgraceful.
Wow. Well, it seems like George Walker and George Hubert Bush, and of course their grandfather Prescott, who funded Hitler, it seems like they're all in cahoots, and it seems to be all a Israeli scam on the world.
If you want to read an article that'll shake you up about George H.W. Bush, you want to read, Did George H.W. Bush Coordinate a JFK Hit Team, authored by Richard Hook, which I also published as editor in Veterans Today. That'll disturb you profoundly. And let me just mention that there's a new conference was held in Santa Barbara on the 50th, the results of which are just now appearing. Six presentations by Phil Nelson about LBJ, by John Hankey about George H.W. Bush, by Peter Janney about the CIA in relation to Mary Meyer, by Larry Rivera about Buell Wesley Frazier, a key witness against Lee Oswald, by Ralph Sinquet on The Man in the Doorway, by me entitled JFK, The Assassination of America. And one more that will be fascinating, too, the results of the American, the Academic Freedom Conference held in Champaign-Urbana just about 2 months ago have now been published online, and where we discuss not only JFK and 9/11, but also the Holocaust, because we have been given a quite exaggerated story of what actually happened in World War II. So I encourage any of your listeners who want to get a bit of a handle on this and understand why there's a whole lot more that has gone on here than they have heretofore been led to believe, track down that article, American Academic Freedom Conference, Are There Limits to Inquiry? JFK, 9/11, and the Holocaust.
Well, I got something for you, but I'm going to let you know, and then we're going to have to call it a show. But I believe that Reagan actually refused to deregulate the banks, and this is why George W. Bush's neighbor by the name of Mr. Hinckley took a pop shot at him.
Well, this is fairly complicated, but it looks as though Hinckley was just a patsy and that he was actually shot by a Secret Service agent as he pushed him into the limousine. The shot entered beneath his armpit. That would have been a very tough shot for Hinckley, but perfect for the Secret Service agent. Barely missed his heart. But I think from that point on, George Herbert Walker Bush was effectively the president of the United States.
Correct. And with that, we're going to have to bid everybody a farewell. Thanks for joining us on The People Speak with our guest, James Fetzer. Please go to veteranstoday.com and look at his articles. They're very, very interesting. And join us next week with our guest, Adam Winkler, professor at UCLA. We will be talking about gun control in America. This is Rock Cash signing out on the BBS Radio Network with The People Speak. Have a good evening.
One bright sunny morning,
leap on fast as summer people. And they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.